going on, and welcome back to A New Sound with me, Morgan Brown. Hope everyone is doing as well as always. I don't want to speak for everyone here, but I think we're all really hitting the end on the pandemic. I think people's mental health, everyone is going a little crazy. We've really hit that point, but I'm happy to say that I've been fully vaxxed. I'm extremely happy to have been, but that doesn't mean this is over. I know there's an end in sight, but man, I just hope everyone is doing the best they possibly can with everything else going on in your lives. In my life, I had a great conversation with one of my, honestly, oldest and dearest friends at this point. Her name's Juliana Parker. I know her just as Julie. We've been friends for, around 7 years. I was like 17 when we became friends. We've been friends, we've been collaborators, we've always kind of been there for each other to talk about music and the music industry. You actually have heard her on one of my albums. She is the voice on the first song of the Amy Incident record. So that shows how long we've been friends and working together. But we had a great interview, we had a great talk. Shout out to our friend Shannon Bailey, a friend of the pod who we discuss in our friendship together. But I don't want to waste any more of your time just talking about me. Let's get to it. Here is my interview with the always wonderful Juliana Parker. Stay tuned. Enjoy. Hope all is well. Flattery will get you nowhere.
So what's up?
No, I'm good. How are you? I was really great to see you, unfortunately, right before everything got messed up.
I know. You never got to let me borrow your bass.
I know. Anything you need for, let me know. I'm definitely down to.
No, it's okay. I got a bass.
Nice. So how has your perspective been from teaching right now? I know everything's going like back into the swing of things, kind of, but how has it been like as a teacher?
Well, it's in the beginning, it was very, very difficult because like nobody was really ready to be learning on the internet. And there was a learning curve to trying to figure out the right positioning for my laptop so that my students could see my keyboard.
Right.
And even then it was hard to be looking at the sheet music at the same time as them. But I really think that it has made some of my students become better learners because they have to be so much more dialed in.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also a lot of kids who just immediately got fatigued and didn't want to deal with it.
I think I would have been one of those. I think with my ADD.
Knowing you, yeah. No, you would have been a terrible student this whole time.
It's very true.
But it's also made a lot of my students who come back in for their in-person lessons now, in person.
Gotcha.
It's made them, I think, appreciate the experience a lot more.
For sure. Now, are you still in Brooklyn?
So I'm still teaching in Brooklyn, but I'm in Queens because my landlord decided she wanted to raise the rent in the middle of a pandemic.
Oof. That's never fun.
It is what it is. We're in a better place now.
Dude, that's awesome. And same roommates as well?
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. And how are you doing? Like, actually, because I do miss you dearly.
Like on a mental level?
Yeah, like on a mental level, like actually, how are you physically feeling and doing? And because again, it was really weird for us because I did get to see you before everything hit the fan. And then now I'm checking back in with you and seeing how you're actually doing.
So like, I definitely hit some serious lows during this, and I think most of us did. I had some really difficult mental health times during the pandemic because like for a couple of months I was alone in the apartment because both of my roommates went home to be with their families for a while. Mm-hmm. So it was really isolating, but you know, teaching kind of saved me a little because I was at least seeing a bunch of different people's faces in a box.
No, that makes sense.
And then I've been steadily improving since getting to come in and teach in the building again.
That's good. I mean, you also stayed really busy compared to other musicians that I know. I truly loved your Sunday performances.
Thank you.
I loved the themes. I loved everything that you were doing. How did that start? What made you want to do it? Just to be active? Or was it like trying to push yourself?
It was kind of both. It was like, I felt like I needed to be performing. I didn't want it to be that I came out of this pandemic, like having stayed exactly where I was when I entered it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have an experience where I had an entire year that I wouldn't be able to write about. Like, I didn't want to have time missing from my biography in a sense.
No, that makes sense.
And I also, you know, I had releases that I wanted to plan, and I didn't want to have disappeared before those come out because
no, that makes sense.
I want people to know I exist.
Well, yeah, I also wanted to discuss, I mean, again, like, but obviously before all this happened, I wanted to have you on just to talk about like the Michael release and the music video, because mm-hmm. that was really awesome and really fun. And I think I also just wanted to talk about, there's very few people in this world, specifically like musician friends of mine, that have or treat their career with as much whimsical and fun nature as you do. And it makes me just so happy because it's so hard to stay fun and stay positive in everything that you've done in your like music catalog and your performances and stuff. You've always just had this really positive outlook. So I wanted to have you on regardless to talk about a bunch of stuff, but I really do love the Sunday performances and everything else. I
really appreciate that, man. Yeah. Dude. I've always, you know, wanted to make sure that there's an aspect of whimsy, an aspect of positivity to me. Like even when I'm singing sad songs, I just want to be there mm-hmm. and having a good time because like, God, it's so easy to be a drag.
I'm well aware.
It's very easy to be a drag, and I don't want people to have to experience that kind of stuff that they can already get from mm-hmm. their regular life when they're hanging out with me.
That's a good point. I never thought of it as that way, because I guess if you go to a concert or anything, half of the, or almost all of them, are going to be people struggling with mental illness, writing about being sad, performing. I never even like really thought of it in that capacity. So the fact that that makes you stand out even more.
Well, I mean, it's not that I'm not like talking about mental illness and the fact that I experience it, because like, I want to make sure that that's also, you know, represented in the music that I write. Because
mm-hmm.
if you look into it, you'll notice there are a couple of moments of me just being like, there's something wrong with me. It's like, music is escapism. That's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Music is escapism. Performing live and going to see shows, that's escapism. I'm here to provide like a safe place to ignore all the things that make you feel like crap.
No.
Or at least like give space to those emotions.
Yeah, and you're really good at it.
Thanks.
as I do say so myself, because I mean, I've known you for years, and obviously like we've always had an extremely interesting rapport, to say the least, but I am a very big supporter of you.
Thank you.
Of course, man. So your last release, Michael.
I'm not a stalker. Say that again?
What'd you say?
I was just saying I put a lot of stock into a high energy performance. Like when I came to see the Amy incident live, I loved that everything was just like jumping and screaming.
Dude, that's what we got. That's what we look for. That's what you got to do. Got to give people a good time, man. And I appreciate you saying that. But no, so the last release, Michael, let's walk through the process, because I think it's always interesting to see when people write songs that are not about love. I know that sounds weird to say. No, that sounds weird to say, but at the same time, like, it's really easy to write a song. Ooh, I love this person. They don't love me. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, it's easy to write a song, but it's not easy to write a good song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very true. But the way you came out with this track, extremely different, such a positive message. What was the beginning of the song like? And like, what was the beginning of the writing process? And then we'll talk about the video and stuff after.
So I had had a terrible, terrible, terrible summer with a terrible, terrible coworker who was, you know, a sexist and like weirdly transphobic and like, this dude has had a lot of things wrong with him. He was really rude.
Gotcha.
And he thought that I couldn't do my job right because I was younger than him and a girl and didn't have a beard. And he just made my summer a living hell. And then like that fall or spring or something, I was always running to class. I was late. I was running to class and I was still angry about it because I guess I had been telling some story. And I got this idea in my head, Michael O getting into fights, Michael O trying to be the one that's right. And it was just sort of going around and around, and I was like, okay, fine, I'm writing it down. So I rushed my way into class and I sat down and I got out my notebook and I wasn't taking notes. I was writing down what I had just written. I don't remember what the lesson was because I was writing a song, but I call that a productive class.
I mean, I think I did the same thing when I was doing classes and everything else. It's really hard when I always talk about it like as almost, it's not a curse, but sometimes you wish you could be able to turn off the creative part of your brain and actually be a product of society. But then sometimes you're like, oh, nah, got to write these lyrics down. They might mean something one day.
And these ones did.
Yeah, and they did. And it slaps.
Yeah, thank you. I come up with choruses all the time. It's mm-hmm. like the first thing that comes to me is always the chorus. And then I have to figure out, God, what the hell is the rest of the song about? Lucky for me, the chorus had the name of the person in it. So I didn't have to work too hard to find out what the subject of the song was.
There you go. It tends to happen. And then
my professor encouraged me to kind of write a letter that I would never send, but just like write a letter to the person saying all the things I want to say. And then we like went back, highlighted our favorite details, and then just like arranged them into verses.
Gotcha. And production wise, you recorded at Berkeley, right?
Where
was this one?
So this one, yeah, it happened when I was at Berkeley. Okay. It was like a combination of like working in the Berkeley production suites and then like recording in my friend Andy's apartment. Andy CP, he's my, you know, arranger, producer, band member extraordinaire. I like to think of him as my personal Jack Antonoff.
It's very true. Everyone needs one of those. I'm still on the market for one.
I'll let you know if I find another.
Please.
And he helped me a lot with, like, you know, bringing it from a piano composition to mm-hmm. a full band situation.
Gotcha. And now when you were doing the video, I mean, it just looked really fun. Like, to be honest, like, I've been a part of many a video shoot and it just looked like a good time. Where did you find an office to do that? It was funny because as I was watching the video, I was like, this just is ridiculous and I love it. And I'm very curious to see how Julie figured this out. Like, this looks so fun.
So my family business, well, it's not really the family business anymore because none of the grandkids want a part of it. It's not that it's a bad business. It's just that, you know, all of our lives are going in different directions. Mm-hmm. But anyway, family business has an office in Stamford. And so I was able to talk to my aunt and say, can we get in here on the weekend and just film? And she said, yeah, if you cover up everything that has the title of our company and anything that looks like important numbers, you can film here.
That sounds awesome.
It was a blast. And so the woman who plays the boss in the uh-huh. video, that is my aunt, who is the boss of that company.
That's sick. That's
yeah.
So fun. And is are your bandmates also in that as well?
Yeah, my awesome. Bandmates. I mean, so originally when we were going to shoot, it was going to have all of my bandmates. Andy, who is the bassist / producer extraordinaire angel, mm-hmm. He plays the daddy's boy one. Mm-hmm. And then there's Leon, who plays the manager hotshot wannabe. And then we were gonna have my drummer at the time participate, but he had an opportunity to go elsewhere. So we ended up bringing in an actor friend of mine to play Slacker Michael.
Love it. Love it. And now between the moon, Michael, and like, I know you've been, obviously you're one of those people that just doesn't stop writing.
Yeah.
What's the situation with the record, dude? What's going to happen? I'm craving. I need it. I need a record, dude.
Well, I mean, I've got something to mail you. I've got, Ooh. Well, you remember when I was in college, I mailed you a cassette tape with the original pop version of Waiting on the Line.
Yes.
And it said your ears only on it. And you immediately shared it with Shannon.
It's exactly true. Our mutual friend, Shannon Bailey, who in all fairness, the song slaps. So I feel it's when you said for my ears only, I feel like that also includes Shannon.
Well, I didn't realize you were literally attached at the hip.
We in college, Shannon and I have been, yes, she is one of the people that looks out for me. So mentally, but regardless, I mean, there was also the, you also sent me just the regular piano version of Waiting on the Line too.
I believe I did.
Also sick. Both versions are great.
Thank you. Well, what I've got to send you now is the full band rock version.
Oh, please.
It's coming next.
I won't send that to Shannon.
Yeah, right.
I won't.
Yeah, right. Like my booty, okay? Well, it doesn't matter if you share because like this song is the next song that is coming out.
Oh, April 30th.
April
30th.
April
30th. Hell yeah. Uh-huh. You got a plug too? Woo!
Yeah, of course.
We love it.
I don't know if
this is coming out Friday.
Okay, this is coming out Friday. Okay, so great. Well, I guess I'm making my announcement early. Shoot. Wasn't gonna tell anybody until April 12th, but whatever.
Hey, you know what? You beat it by a couple weeks. So unless it changes, I mean, April 30th, new music.
It's officially on its way out. See, like what's going on here is my friends and I have created a proper record label.
Right. So when we hung out last time, were telling me about this. What has been going on and what's the origin of this whole thing? Because when you were first telling me, you were saying it was still in the works, but if obviously things have changed, I want to hear about it.
Well, now it's for real. Awesome. So Andy, a couple of years ago, got introduced to a woman named Lisa Mary, and she is just the strongest, most genuine, most adorable woman in the world. She's about my mother's age, and she's perhaps the most resilient woman I've ever met. But several years ago, she had a bit more of an active career, and she was able to secure herself digital distribution through the Orchard. And when she and Andy started working together, she said to him, you know, you've got some great music yourself and you've got some adorable friends. Introduce me to them and maybe we should all just, I'll put out all their music myself. And then as we all got to know Lisa, we came to the conclusion that, yeah, we wanted to reinvent what it means to be an indie record label. And so the idea of Gotta Get a Life that we all, because we all are owners of the company together, we all really own our own music and own our masters and own our copyright. And there's never going to be an exploitative gross side to it.
For sure.
Plus we all get major digital distribution, which is super cool.
That's insane. That's absolutely amazing.
It's absolutely bonkers.
That's so dope. And the fact that you actually do get to own everything, that's a musician's biggest dream.
Yeah. So it's this incredible blessing. And I'm just floored every time I think of the fact that I have this situation that I'm in and that I've helped to create. And I'm going to be the first big release for the new age of this record label.
That's awesome. Oh, thanks. You're such an awesome person. I just really respect you so much.
Thank you, Morgan.
Of course, dude. I mean, we go way back.
You'll always be my Valentine.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, what your listeners don't know is that you, so the reason that I bring up waiting on the line so much, yes, with you in particular is you are, are you okay with me outing you?
Oh yeah, very, yeah, it's, you can out me in any way possible.
Okay, cool. So Morgan is the person who originally inspired the song.
That's you, a flex.
It's a very small flex when you hear how long we actually went out for. 3 days.
Very true. We did date for 3 days, three consecutive days, but we've been friends for, I mean, I've known you since I was 17. It's crazy.
Something like that.
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
And so, and that's where we get that opening line of, we walked just over the line of comfort, mm-hmm, and just as soon we tumbled on back.
And you know,
and
what?
Like 6 months later, you called me up on the phone and I was like, does this guy know we're not dating anymore? But we became so close and just spoke on the phone for hours, like every single night.
No, it's true. I mean, you have helped me through so much of like my own life, like growing up, and specifically like going through college. And like, it's always been so nice to have you as a confidant and like a musical collaborator and like a friend that we can always like talk about music and have like a great conversation with. And I truly do adore you in every capacity. Well, and who would have thought 3 days of Berklee band camp would have resulted in three different versions of a dope song.
Well put.
Are you gonna make so the full band version is the one that's coming out?
The full band version is the one that's coming out.
Gotcha.
And so of course there's going to be a proper music video for it.
For sure.
I'm trying not to say too much about it, but it's gonna be along the lines of that whimsy that I love.
Right.
I'm working together with my roommate Olive Legace is this brilliant multimedia animation specialist.
You showed me some of her work. It's crazy good.
Mm-hmm,
insane mm-hmm. animation work and all of like the textiles and everything else. It looks so cool.
So we're working something out really cool looking along those lines for Waiting on the Line.
That's awesome. That's gonna be, I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
I'm so happy. This is gonna be so fun, and I get to keep bragging about this song, so it's gonna be awesome. Oh, you are seriously the best, and I will make sure that I promote that as much as possible. But otherwise,
that's awful kind
of
you, man.
Dude,
if not for me, then for your own clout.
Well, obviously, I'm very into my own clout.
I know you are.
It's very true. But no, and I think it was very odd too, like just going back on like our friendship and our past and stuff. It was really mm-hmm. funny to bring up Shannon again, where like the fact that she was like, oh, I'm from Connecticut. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I know one person. And she was like, who? And I was like, there's only one person I know. And she was like, oh yeah, Julie Edelson or Juliana Parker for this interview. Mm-hmm. And I was like, God damn it. That's perfect. Of course, there's only one
Shannon and I went to summer camp together. I think
talk about your time at Bucks Rock, because that was a huge pivotal moment for you as a growing musician, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, as a musician and as just like a human.
As a
like
human.
Learning how to be a good human.
Right.
So I started going to Bucks Rock when I was 11 and a half. That was the youngest you could be at the time, was 11 and a half.
Jeez.
Yeah. And my first summer there was a very interesting person. I was, you
know. Still are.
Thank you, but I was a very different type of interesting person.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you know this about me, when I was 11 and a half years old, I decided that summer that my thing was going to be that I wear a beret every day.
That's awesome. That's sick.
But I didn't know how to wear one. So like I'd seen it on TV. I'd seen it in cartoons. So I thought that like the way you wear a beret is just like flat on top of your head, flat like a graduation cap. And every single day.
Is that
day,
not how you wear a beret?
Well, it's how I do.
Oh my gosh.
And that was how like I made a name for myself on camp, was like I was the one that wore a beret. And I made some fantastic friends there who like helped me to understand that everything that makes me different from the people that I grew up with in Connecticut, because like the town where I came from, if you were different, you were different, like
very different.
It's very Scarsdale in that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where like you don't want to be anything other than the normal white Christian family, where gotcha. Everybody's into like lacrosse and field hockey,
which I'm sure you weren't a big fan of.
I thought it was cool that they were all friends. And so
you're like, I'm a big fan of friendship.
Yeah, I love friendship. And so, but then when I went to Bucks Rock, I wasn't the weird one anymore. I was one of hundreds of weird ones who all fit in together. And I got to explore theater, and I got to explore painting and drawing. And I tried out pottery, and I tried out metalworking. I got to do everything. And that was even where I really started getting into songwriting. Because a couple of years into it, I made friends with I finally got like comfortable enough to really go into the music shed and meet the counselors there, who were hosting a songwriting circle. Where you would go in, try to write a song in a day, and then everybody would share. And I have some of those songs recorded. They're probably not going to see much of the light of day.
But they're for you.
But, yeah, they're for me.
And that's all that matters.
But that was how I gained like confidence in sharing my writing with other people. I was always happy to write, and I was always happy to share my ideas, but becoming a full-fledged songwriter was a big step for me. And then sharing that music and wanting for other people to play it with me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, being that young anyway and putting yourself out there to any capacity is really hard.
Yeah, but
it the was fact that you were in such like a nice environment that was everyone supporting each other, I mean, that was probably huge.
The most supportive community that you could ever ask for. I, you know, at first I was a camper there, then I was a CIT, and then I was a counselor. I did a full 10 summers there throughout those three, like, levels.
Damn. I mean, that's intense. But you also came from a pretty musical family.
Yes. I mean, I'm sure that it goes back farther than this, but, like, my mother's father is a drummer, and he taught, like, band in school, and my mother is a singer and a pianist and a violinist like me. And my father plays guitar, banjo, dulcimer, the other dulcimer. That's like the mountain and the hammer dulcimers. He's a spectacular player and arranger, and he inspires me constantly. And then I think my grandfather on my father's side also played guitar, and my father's mother is also a violinist. And her father is a violinist. Well, was a violinist. I have his violin.
That's sick.
Yeah, he brought it across the ocean twice. They sent him back the first time.
Didn't make it? Didn't make the cut?
He had like polio or something.
Oof. Yeah. Damn, gotta hate polio.
Yeah. I think we should end polio. Let's get rid of it.
A pretty good general idea. That's a general rule. I think we're pretty good with polio as a society. But the fact that you had such a great supportive family, as well with Bucks Rock and everything, obviously has helped you become the musician that you are today.
Yes.
And then, so I mean, I don't know. I'm genuinely happy just to talk to you about this stuff, and I'm happy to have you on, man. And everyone, go stream Michael and watch the video right now, and wait till April 30th for new music.
April 30th,
right? Am I crazy?
On the line.
Awesome.
It's just so, you know, I was very sad that I had to wait so long to do my next release, but I'm just so genuinely happy that it's coming.
Dude, I'm stoked for it, and I'm stoked for you.
Thank you.
But thank you for coming on, and I love you so dearly. A big fan. And I'll talk to you later, man.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man.